Hallo und herzlich willkommen, liebe Freunde des guten Geschmacks. Ich begrüße euch recht herzlich zum Mädel.de Podcast Mädel Minds The Pit Unplugged. Mein Name ist Diana Heinbucher. Ich führe euch ganz gewohnt durch diesen Pit der Erkenntnis. Ganz genau, Trommelwirbel. Ich habe heute eine Band dabei, die ganz klassisch keine Metal-Band ist. Ich habe den Niklas von The Hives mit dabei und ich bin jetzt einfach mal so ganz offen und ehrlich zu euch. Also The Hives, das war für mich immer irgendwie so Indie-Rock war das immer für mich. Und als ich mich jetzt aber natürlich mit The Hives ein bisschen mehr auseinandergesetzt habe, ist mir eigentlich aufgefallen, dass The Hives eher Punk sind, obwohl ja sozusagen die großartigen Hives überhaupt nicht in irgendeine Schublade da passen. Also die kann man aktuell keinem Genre zuordnen, finde ich. Das war aber nicht immer so. Warum? Also sozusagen, ne, die haben ja auch eine ganz lange Geschichte. Die gibt es jetzt so über 30 Jahre. Und die haben ja auch einfach mal für 11 Jahre keine neue Musik herausgebracht. Und trotzdem ist es ja dann gelungen, irgendwie wieder neue Musik herauszubringen. Und in dem Zusammenhang hält sich der Mythos, könnte man fast sagen, über Randy Fitzsimmons. Und da wird ganz häufig gesagt, dass eben Niklas Arson, der unser heutiger Interviewgast sozusagen, dass das Alias von ihm ist. Und das ist aber tatsächlich nicht so. Denn, und das beschreibt er jetzt dann sehr schön, Randy Fitzsimmons ist der Geist der Hives, könnte man sagen. Kreative Mastermind, das immer anwesend war, wenn die Hives Musik gemacht haben. Und dann konnten sie aber für 11 Jahre lang keine Musik machen. Also ist vermutlich Randy Fitzsimmons von uns gegangen. Und trotzdem haben es die großartigen Hives geschafft, nach 11 Jahren wieder ja, Musik herauszubringen, wahrscheinlich bessere Musik als je zuvor, könnte man meinen. Und in dem Zusammenhang macht es dann natürlich auch total Sinn, wenn man dann den Song hört, The Hives Forever, Forever The Hives, das, was so großkotzig und reißerisch klingt, ist dann eigentlich gar nicht mehr großkotzig und reißerisch, sondern beschreibt einfach die Quintessenz einer Reise, denn auch die Hives haben ja eine Reise gemacht. Genau. Und dann haben wir also jetzt hier Niklas Arson im Podcast mit dabei und wir unterhalten uns gar nicht über diese aktuelle Platte The Hives Forever, Forever The Hives und auch gar nicht über die vorherige Platte The Death of Randy Fitzsimmons, sondern wir unterhalten uns eher darüber sozusagen, wie aus The Hives geworden sind und dass auch den großartigen Hives es schwerfällt, Musik zu schreiben, dass das niemanden so einfach von der Hand geht und dass großartige Musik einfach seine Zeit braucht. Und mit dieser ja energischen Rede entlasse ich euch jetzt in den heutigen Podcast mit, nicht mit Randy Fitzsimmons, seht ihr, jetzt wollte ich das nämlich sagen, ja, genau, mit Niklas Arson von The Hives. Wir haben sie getroffen am 25.10.2025 in Leipzig im Haus Auensee. Und ich war natürlich wieder zu spät, nicht zu spät, aber ich war gehetzt. Ich stand im Stau und ihr wisst ja, wie das ist. Man will pünktlich sein bei sowas. Und ich war dann auch noch pünktlich, aber eben gehetzt. Und da fällt es mir natürlich manchmal ein bisschen schwer, meine Zunge gerade in den Mund zu nehmen. Aber ich denke, wir verstehen noch alles, was hier gleich gesprochen werden wird. Ich wünsche euch ein erkenntnisreiches Podcast-Erlebnis. Welcome to Metal Minds, The Pit Unplugged, the podcast of metal.de. My name is Diana Heinbucher and I will guide you through today's pit as usual. Today I have a band as a guest that isn't exactly metal because I'm visiting a band that doesn't need a genre at all since they are the genre themselves. For over 30 years, they have represented energy, wit, and handmade exactness and have never lost their sense of humor. I'm happy he's here today, one of the creative forces behind The Hive, Niklas Arson. Nice to have you here. How are you today?
Nice to be here. I'm very good, thanks. I've enjoyed the Leipzig weather today. Been out in the on my little bike.
Yeah, it's beautiful outside. The autumn is very nice this year. Okay, your current record, The Hives Forever, Forever The Hives, hasn't been out that long. What's the message behind the title?
Well, the title is basically, you know, The Hives Forever, Forever the Hives. It just means like the hives is something that just go on forever. We have always thought that we were going to, you know, make a record and quit, or make three records and quit, or make whatever, you know. It always takes such a toll on us to be touring and to be playing, so we never think we're going to last that long. But, you know, after whatever, 30 years of existence or something, it's just a matter of fact now, you know. It's just a scientific fact, rather, that the hives will be around forever, it seems. Like, it never ends.
Yeah, yeah. But actually, I don't want to talk so much about your current record. I think we have to take a few steps into the past. And so let us talk about your previous record. He's called The Death of Randy Fitzsimmons, and it involves the myth of Randy Fitzsimmons. And now I'm talking to you, and your alias is Randy Fitzsimmons. So,
no?
No. That's a myth?
Well, that's what people have said, but yeah. It's not true.
It's not true? Okay. No. So, but maybe you can tell us something about the myth of Randy Fitzsimmons and why he needs to die.
Well, the reason why it's a myth is it's because it's a person who wants to remain anonymous. And that was always a mindfuck to people. You know, like people had a hard time accepting the fact that somebody wanted to be anonymous. Yeah. And that's why they thought it was a myth. And that's why they thought it was, you know, it was one of us or something. So it's, but it never was one of us. It's just like, it's a person that's alive and who is part of the Hives, you know, process of making albums. But then, yeah, as far as that, like, we never found him, you know. We never found a body or anything, so we don't know what's happened, you know. Okay. It's, he could be dead, he could be alive, you know, who knows. A record came out of it, at least, which was good, because, you know, we hadn't released a record in, you know, 11 years, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it takes a lot of time. And can you remember why it, what you hindered to release a new record about over 11 years?
Well, it was a pandemic was like 3 of those years, I think. Yeah. And then it was a really hard time to finish stuff. Like even some of the stuff on this record, this new one, The Hives Forever, Forever the Hives, is, you know, stuff that we worked on a long time ago, like even around 2003, kind of, you know, certain parts. So we've always, you know, there's like a vault of stuff, you know, but with the with the Randy Fitzsimmons record, the death of Randy Fitzsimmons, it was more like just a lot of things that just came in the way. So it just didn't happen. It was, you know, it wasn't a good period in time for us, you know. This is better. Now that we have momentum, you know, we can sort of just kind of keep rolling, you know, keep the snowball rolling and, you know, make a bigger ball, I guess.
Yeah. But you said it, to make music, it takes time. And when we go back... we go again back in time. You started in the 1993. That's the year where the internet was available for everyone. So maybe the internet came up because of the Hives founding.
Yeah, maybe. No, I remember we had a friend who was going to make our first website, and he was like, yeah, I can make a website for you guys. And I was like, we were all like, what's a website? We'd never heard about it. That was fun though, you know.
Yeah.
We did... we had a website fairly early on and stuff. It was kind of fun.
Yeah, and then now you said, if you think about that, making music takes time, and sometimes there came up pieces, they lay for 15 years, 20 years in your at the site because you don't work on it. And then the impulse came, the sparkle came, and then you made something with the music.
Yeah, I guess. You know, there's just, you know, sometimes the, I guess the boredom of not releasing anything was too hard. And then it's just like, the other bit is, you know, like you said, like to make good music, it requires time, but it also requires to finish stuff at certain points in time. So I guess that's what we're able to do.
Mm-hmm. And when you think about your creative process, while we're talking about making music, how does your process changed over the time from 1933 to now?
Our process of making music.
Yeah.
The problem is that it hasn't changed that much. You know, the problem is that it's still, you know, that's why it's hard to do. because it's, you know, it takes time. We gotta, the one thing that we do, which is a problem for us, but it's also our greatest asset, I think, it's the way that we, when, if we're going to play a song, we need to play every version of that song. Like, we need to have all the parts in different places. We need to try this here, need to try that then. And then we play our way through that. And then at the end of that, we will be at the final solution of what the song is supposed to be. You know, like, you move the parts around, like, if part can go here or there and stuff, we try that. We try everything. And that takes a really long time. But at the end of it, we know that we've tried to solve the puzzle in a million wrong ways. And we're left with just the right way of solving the puzzle, you know. So that's when it starts to sound good to us. You know?
Yeah, I think that's very important to keep in mind, because only if you try something, you can know about that was the wrong way. If you didn't try it, you will never find it out.
Yeah.
Okay. You are a Swedish band, and if you think about your roots, so many bands from Sweden or in your time where you jump from the Swedish stages to the international stages, many incredible bands from Sweden make this jump also. And some bands I've talked to, they say that Sweden has created a very good condition for the culture and creative industry, and creativity and musicality were encouraged from an early age. How was it for you?
Well, it was, exactly that. You know, there was tons of music in our town. And there was a scene of bands. And then there was a guy who wasn't in any of the bands, really. He was just like a guy who booked the bands, and he would kind of be manager here and there. And he also started up a label, which was the first label that we were on. So there were all these bands, like all these punk bands who would come through our town. Like, he would book, you know, American punk bands to come to Fagersta, you know, our little town. So that was like, for us, that was the reason why we ended up there and why we were probably into music as much, because there was already a scene there, you know, like kids who were older than us, you know, that maybe we looked up to and stuff, they were in bands. So that's the reason. Stuff usually comes out of something. You know, to some people, it's just like the Hives are just a band that you grab from the middle of the woods and then put on the biggest stages in the world. But it was more than that. You know, there was a scene where we could kind of, you know, where we could grow up as, you know, as a band and as musicians and, you know, as music fans.
Mm-hmm. And you said that sometimes, or the most people think, maybe a band like the Hives, you grab it and put it on stage. But bands need to grow. They need the small venues and so on. And what also Swedish bands told me, that the condition have changed a lot, and that new artists are not able to have so much support like in the early 2000 years.
Maybe. I wouldn't really know about that. About that bit, like, you know, there's all these sort of, you know, cultural grants and stuff, like state cultural grants that would, you know, be handed out to maybe musicians who would be like in smaller, you know, like jazz musicians or classical music and stuff, or opera. You know, that has to be kind of subsidized by state, because they won't, you know, you don't sell 1,000 tickets to whatever. If you don't sell 1,000 tickets to your jazz show, you might want to apply for like a government grant or something. But we were never really part of that. Like, us, our, you know, if we could get gas money, we could get to the next town and then we play there. You know, we were so young at the time. So if we could make a living off of the little money that we got, and then it just grew kind of. I mean, we were maybe 20 or something. We started making it bigger, you know, and maybe we were, I don't know, 20, 22 or 3 or something. We started living off the music kind of. Okay. So we were fairly young. So and that was just like by us selling tickets to shows and just being in the van and touring all the time. Like, we didn't have to go after government grants in that that respect. So I have no idea whether that is better or, you know, worse now. But for us, it was always just like we were able to make a living off of it fairly early on anyway.
It's impressing. Most bands have a point where they need to make a decision if they want to make a living out of their music or if they do it as a hobby. Or was it with you?
Well, we never really had to, because we started, like, I mean, we were just kind of sort of taking odd jobs here and there. we were never set on it. Like, we wanted to try and make it as a band. And while you're doing that, you have to have other jobs. Like, we worked as, you know, garbage men and teachers and, you know, assistants and whatever, you know, like we would do any job that would keep you afloat for a few months and then you'd have to go somewhere else. We started a little bit too, but all of that was just like constantly interrupted by the fact that we were in a band that was doing better and better. So I think we never really had to make that choice when we were old enough to, you know, like we didn't have kids or anything at the time or something. So it was more like we could just kind of mess around living cheap kind of and then still make a living off the band kind of. So we had to make that decision, you know, whatever, 5-10 years later, maybe it would have been harder. But, you know, we decided that we kind of wanted to give it a go from pretty early age, and we kind of knew what that meant. You know, some people or some bands might think that, you know, just because you choose a career as a rock band, somebody will support you. That's not how it works, you know. You have to work for that money or whatever, and you have to work for the little money that's there. You know, like, if you wanted to have something that supported you, maybe you should choose another career path or something. But it's, because it's not, it's kind of like, you know, you're an athlete or something. Like, if you decide to be a professional athlete, you don't just get there. By, you know, you don't just decide to be one and then somebody will give you money for it. You have to earn that by running fast or whatever, you know, jumping high.
Thank you. And when you grow as a band, when your stages get bigger, when you get more public, and how do you protect yourself from commerce undermining the authenticity? Yeah, the authenticity.
I mean, that's a thing that you constantly do. Like, every day there are decisions that you might feel like, you know, that you have to take that feels like, you know, but if, as long as you kind of make decisions that where you feel like you're staying true to what you feel, you know, then that's good. Like, we've, every once in a while, we've evaluated, because, I mean, we used to say no to everything, which at the end got kind of boring. So then we started, you know, saying yes to some things, like saying yes to having our music used in a movie or a video game or whatever. And then that opened up other doors where you could maybe get a show for that, or, you know, where you could maybe sell some records off of that or something. So that kind of seemed more fun, because when, if you say no to everything, nothing happens. But if you start saying yes to some things, at least the ones that you feel like, I'll be okay with this, you know, or this might even be fun, then I think you're in a good path. But if you constantly make decisions where you feel like you're selling out, or you're doing it against your will, I don't think that's healthy.
Yeah. I agree. I think it's the most important thing is that you are doing things where you can say it's okay for me. That's my way.
Yeah. And it's also that thing of having a confidence of thinking, hey, this is what, you know, like sometimes people go, why are you wearing the suits? You know, we like, because we look good. Like that's. Yeah. But some people think that, oh, a rock band should be wearing jeans or whatever. But to us, this is, you know, this is what we're supposed to be wearing, you know.
Yeah, that's nice that you come up with the suits, because you're wearing these suits. And I think that's brilliant, because that's also, in a way, something like punk.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that's...
Well, it was from the beginning, was kind of a punk idea, because, you know, all the punk bands would wear the spikes and the leather and stuff, and then we would wear the suits. I mean, you have the type of punk that's, you know, like whatever, the Buzzcocks or something, or Magazine, or, you know, that's kind of, you know, that sort of suit punk, but or Blondie or whatever. But it was kind of fun to have people be annoyed at you for wearing a suit, you know. It was easy, you know. Kind of an easy poke at people, you know.
Yeah. And can you still remember how you decided to wear the suits? Or maybe another question to this is, how important was the image next to the music? Because the suits are a kind of your image.
Yeah. Well, I think the image is always very important to any band that I like. Like, all the bands that I like have a very distinct image. Like, if you come from metal, everybody knows what to wear and, you know, how to look, you know, what type of hair to have and, you know. So it's the same with our music. I like the fact that, like all music is very vain. You know, there's vanity in all music. Like, you know, in Sex Pistols, even though they're punks and whatever, spinning, they were super vain music. You know, so it's the same with the Hives. You know, that's like, you know, AC/DC, Kraftwerk, the Ramones. Like, you don't go to a show wondering what they're gonna wear. You know exactly what you're gonna get on stage, and that's like that's a sort of a trademark in a way. Like that, you know, AC/DC look a certain way, the Ramones looked a certain way, Kraftwerk looks a certain way, even though it's different from time to time. Kind of more like us, you know, you swap the suits around or whatever. But it's a thing of. I like my music to be vain. I think. Yeah, I think that's pretty cool.
Yeah, I think it's.
And if it's not vain, at least it's got to be, you know, whatever. You know. Whatever blues guy is just like wearing his regular clothes, but they might be cool clothes, you know, because he decided once that he'd have a cool hat or whatever.
Mm. And if you decided to wear the suits, was there another option?
Not really for us. I mean, no suits would have been the option, but we like suits better, you know.
Okay. And for a long time, you're the Hives. You are still almost in the funding lineup. Not all, but nearly. Everyone from the band founding is in the lineup of the band.
Yeah, pretty much. We have our bass player who stopped playing with us maybe then 10, 12 years ago or something.
Mm-hmm.
Something like that.
And how do you get not tired of each other?
Well, we do get tired of each other all the time, but it's also kind of, I mean, I guess it's weird. We do get tired of each other all the time, but we also don't get tired of each other, if you know what I mean. Like, we still have, you know, the same type of humor that we had when we were young. We still have this, you know, like, we still kind of crack the same jokes and stuff, and it's still kind of funny in the same way. So I think that's a way of, and also the way that we're playing, like, we're in a band together, like, we're a good unit. Like, the way that we sound when we play a show as the Hives is good. I know for a fact that we could not have that anywhere else with other members, you know. Like, you could have something, you know, sound similar, but it wouldn't sound like this, you know. It has to do with what sort of tempo and what sort of timing a person has within their body, and then it has to do with how you combine those sort of tempos. So I think the way that we sound, you know, we sounded different when we had Dr. Matt Destruction in the band. That was another sound, and it's still, like, Johan plays the bass in a different way, but it's still, you know, like, 4 out of 5 is still the same, and it's, you know, it's still good. So it's, you know, it's good in a different way, just, you know.
I think also in the context of making good music, trust plays a very big role, I think.
Yeah. And it's also that thing where you have, for so many years, kind of funneled in on what your music is supposed to be. Like, you've had all the arguments around it, trying to, you know, you should be playing like this, or I should be playing like this, or we should be playing like this, or, you know, you've had all those arguments over the course of 30 years. So you know why you have them, and you know why you sound the way you do now, you know.
Yeah.
So it's that's one of the things that's a kind of a glue that keeps us together, you know, both the music bit, but also the private bit, where we, you know, we're kind of like brothers in a way.
Yeah.
Some of us are actually brothers, like me and Pelle, but, you know, like, so the rest of us are also brothers, you know.
Yeah.
And it's just that, like, that's the type of family, you know, like, you don't always agree with your family members. Like, you probably fight harder with family than you do with friends. And that's kind of, we probably fight as hard as family, you know, since we've done it since we were like 14 with each other, you know.
Yeah.
So I think that's also one thing that kind of bonds you in a way. Maybe. Yeah. It could also kill your band, but I think it's, for us, it's one of the things that kind of bonded us in a way.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. If you look ahead now, how do you see the role of rock music in compared to your beginning to now, to 2025?
It's hard to say. I mean, for us, like, rock music and sort of punk, maybe more even punk music in a way, it's always like, you know, like, it doesn't have to be popular for you to like it. Like, it doesn't have to be popular for you to get into it. It's kind of like, whatever, pizza. Like, everybody doesn't have to like pizza, but if you love pizza, pizza's there. Like, it's available. Same thing for us. Like, when we started playing the music, we never expected to become a popular band. We just wanted to be a band. We wanted to be a band that toured. I think that was the goal of our band, was to be a band that toured. we didn't really care if we were going to be popular because we never expected to be popular, even though we thought we were good. We just figured out, you know, it's weird to think that you would be popular, you know, like you just have to do it first and then see what comes out of it. Mm. You know, if you start with a dream to be popular, I think that's when you make those, you know, decisions that might, you know, that might fuck with that a little bit. Like you have to, it's better if you think that we're going to do this way and then you do it and either you become popular or you don't. And for us, it was for at least 7 years, we weren't popular, you know, and then we started becoming popular later. So it's, it could be either or, I think. But, I mean, rock music as a whole, as long as there are, like, good bands coming out, then rock music is in good shape, or punk music, or whatever we're talking about here. So, and I think that's been... It's this thing, pretty much since people started calling it rock and roll, and saying that rock and roll is now invented, it must have been within months. You know, let's say this is, you know, 50s, sort of, mid-50s. That's when people started maybe calling it rock and roll and stuff, and, you know, having bands who were then rock and roll, and it was supposed to be like rowdy music and stuff. It was only a matter of months after that, I think, that people started talking about maybe rock and roll is dead now. And then they have then been talking about it for 70 years in the same aspect. You know, it's 2025 today, and from 1955, you know, 70 years of talking about how rock and roll is dying. But it's, you know, it's kind of like talking about how football is dying. Is it dying? I don't really think so. You know, people are still playing it. Yeah. The same thing rock and roll. Like, people are still playing it, you know.
Yeah. So. Maybe it's our illusion, or it's an illusion about rock and roll should be. And if it doesn't fit with our vision about it, so we say it's dying.
Yeah, I have no idea why people say it's dying. You know, you go to concerts and there are thousands and thousands of people there looking at rock bands. That's not like a thing that's dying. And as far as, it doesn't have to be 1,000 people there. It could be 7 people there. And as long as those 7 people are having a good time, you know, being sweaty and, you know, moshing and whatever they're doing to the rock and roll, then rock and roll is very much alive, you know.
Yeah, I think so. Yesterday I talked to a musician and he said it's not about to have big dreams about musician. If you want to make music, then it's important to be on the way and and not the goal, because you
the
don't...
The journey is the goal. Well, it's totally that. I mean, you just... Like, some people think that you have to be... Like I was saying, like, some people think that you have to be popular when you start, or you have to have some... Like, you have to have a certain guitar or something. Like, you just start. Like, you start, and then you see where that takes you, you know?
Yeah.
So, I agree.
Okay, Niklas. We've dug pretty deep today, and I have 3 more questions to you. If you could change something about the music industry, what would you change?
About the music industry? I mean, the music industry changed so much on its own the past 20 years. Like, it used to be like big record labels being in power. And now I guess it's streaming services being in power. You know, they call the shots kind of on what artists are supposed to make from their music. And where it used to be kind of record labels more so. And also record labels would decide what was released, you know. Unless it was, you know, DIY. But there was a lot of money in the big record companies, which wasn't healthy, I think. You know, because then it's just like somebody, whatever. Let's call him Paul. Paul decides what music is being released on Universal. That's like one guy. I think it should be, you know, if you have it, but you know, the opposite of that is like the DIY thing, which is, you know, like Buzzcocks, I guess, you know, kind of started in a way or something. Like, you just, well, you know, it was around before that, but that's when kind of when they started calling it DIY or whatever. And then you save up some money, you record your thing, and you save up money enough to release it, and then you sell it yourself. Like, that also works. So that was always around. But it used to be like the big record companies had lots of power, and now maybe then streaming services are calling more. Like, it's... The good thing about that transition is that there's not, you know, a set amount of people that decides what should be released. Now everything is released, you know, you can just, like, you can record a, you know, fart noise on your phone and then release it within seconds, and then that's a song on Spotify or whatever, or any other, you know, streaming service. So I guess maybe it's at least better, but is it good? I don't know. Like the sheer mass of, you know, maybe, you know, I shouldn't be complaining about that. You know, the sheer mass of bad music is probably healthy. You know, like I was saying, you know, if music is released, you know, if music is heard, then it's very much alive. So I guess that's a good thing then, you know. And the difference was, too, that, you know, with big record companies and artists making lots of money off of their albums was that, you know, a lot of artists didn't tour. A lot of artists, they didn't like touring, so they would. And I think artists should be touring. You know, that's where you go and see a band live. You know, that's supposed to be a thing. I like when there's touring, so I kind of liked when artists weren't making as much money off of their, you know, off of their physical products. Or at least, you know, the sort of weird money that's like, that's too much. I think artists should make enough money off of their albums, and I think artists should make enough money off of their streaming, and I think artists should make enough money off of their touring. Like, it doesn't have to be the crazy numbers, but it should be so that people can tour and release music and, you know, do what's kind of fun. As long as it's popular enough for people that want to go and see it, you know.
Yeah, I think it's a very important thing. I think about several times, because I think last year I have an interview with a band, and they said also that in the next years there will be musicians. They only make music for their own or to publish it, but don't go on tour. Mm. And I think it's very boring. It's
yeah, and that was the way that it used to be. You know, like. All of a sudden, when artists weren't making, you know, money off of their records, you know, like Tom Petty would come to Sweden, like, you know, he'd come, he hadn't been there for 20 years or something. So he'd come on tour to Sweden. Dolly Parton came several times. You know, these artists who didn't have to go on tour before had to start touring to, I don't know, to upkeep their, you know, whatever life they had or whatever. Mm-hmm. So I think that was a good thing. You know, they were kind of lured out of their caves a little bit. So I got to go and see, you know, Tom Petty, for instance, you know.
Yeah, I think to have the live music that made something with us. Mm. And without enjoying music live, we will miss huge part.
And that's the best thing about that bit is that, I mean, you can start where you live. You can, like, in your house or whatever, in your apartment or wherever you live, like, you can play a guitar and sing to that. And then you can start playing live. And that bit, like the bit where you go on stage, like that's usually free, minus transport to get there. You know, maybe you could take the bus or whatever or walk. But that's like, that's when music exists. Music starts existing the second you play it, you know. So I think as long as you have that, then that's healthy, I think. And then you can, you know, if it's a good artist, you know, they'll move on from there, you know.
Yeah. Okay, so then I have two questions left here. For what you are in the here and now grateful for?
What am I? I'm grateful for this. You know, I'm grateful of being able to tour, even though it's been so many years. Like, if I'd, very happy about that. That people still come to our shows and still come. Like, even some of these shows are, you know, bigger than some of the shows we've done in certain areas before, you know, like we're doing better than ever in South America, for instance, and all that stuff is amazing. So it's super fun. So, I mean, coming in here in the morning, you know, I come to this venue, there's great breakfast, you know, this place is nice and warm, you know, we get to play our show in the evening. Like, there's nothing that I can't like about that. Like, everything is awesome and good all the time for us as a band.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much.
And if you had one wish free, what would you wish for?
One wish
free?
Free, you know, I guess most wishes. Like, how much would it otherwise be, like, to pay for, you know, whatever? Well, now it's, you know, with the looking at the state of the world, it's just like, you know, world peace is, you know, that should be on anybody's lips if you get that question, you know. That should be the first thing to go.
Yeah, I think so. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
This was the Metal Minds podcast, Metal Minds Pit Unplugged. My name was and will always be Diana Heinbucher, and my guest was Niklas Arsen from The Hives. I guided you through today's pit, and stay curious, stay loud, and maybe also a little bit hike life crazy. Thank you.
Super.